From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Lost in a crazy news cycle in late June was a bombshell report in The Intercept investigating what it calls NSA spy hubs in 8 cities across the country. The investigative media outlet says it has found an AT&T facility containing networking equipment that transports large quantities of internet traffic across the US and the world in each of the following cities: Atlanta, Chicago, Dallas, Los Angeles, New York City, San Francisco, Seattle, and Washington, D.C. Authors Ryan Gallagher and Henrik Moltke write, "A body of evidence, including classified NSA documents, public records, and interviews with several former AT&T employees, indicates that the buildings are central to an NSA spying initiative that has for years monitored billions of emails, phone calls, and online chats passing across U.S. territory." Whistleblower Edward Snowden tweeted that the report was, quote, "the most important surveillance story you will see for years," and that it revealed how AT&T became the internet's biggest enemy, secretly collaborating against its customers and partners to destroy your privacy. AT&T is one of the largest providers of wireless internet and cable TV in the nation, and has just had its $85 billion mega merger with Time Warner approved by a federal judge. My guest is Henrik Moltke, investigative journalist and documentary filmmaker, and he is the co-author with Ryan Gallagher of The Intercept piece entitled "The Wiretap Rooms, the NSA's Hidden Spy Hubs in 8 U.S. Cities." Welcome to the program, Henrik.
Thank you, Sonali.
So first, this relationship between AT&T and the NSA is not newly revealed, right? This was something that was known, that the NSA has found in AT&T a very trusting corporate partner. But is the extent of NSA's role previously unknown?
Well, so this reporting builds on several previous stories. The first one was in 2005-06, the New York Times, and after that, Wired reported on 2 different installments of the same basic thing, which was this post 9/11 warrantless wiretapping scandal, where New York Times found out through sources that there had been this big program put in place that was very different from what the NSA had been doing previously, in that it swept up a lot of traffic without warrants. And after that, a man called Mark Klein, a technician who worked at AT&T's facility in San Francisco, decided to come forward. He was encouraged by this reporting in New York Times and decided to come forward with material he'd gathered about this secret room that he'd found, room 641A, in Folsom Street, San Francisco. And so in 2015, I worked on another story with New York Times and ProPublica, which built on Snowden's documents, which gave a whole new level of insight into this relationship between AT&T and NSA, and which they called a partnership. They talked about how extremely willing and loyal AT&T was. And so it's a relationship that dates back decades and has a high level of collaboration from AT&T.
So tell us about these 8 cities, each of which you found to have unmarked, nondescript buildings owned by AT&T. I mentioned the cities already. Tell us about the buildings, how you determined where these buildings were. Your article actually publishes where the buildings are.
Right. The reason we did this is that these are privately owned telecommunication hubs. They are not in some ways, totally unknown. I think people who work in the industry probably know some of them. And they have this role of basically working as regional hubs for AT&T's networks. They date back to the phone era where the Bells had these regional, the regional Bell daughter companies of AT&T had locations where they would switch from regional local networks to long lines phone calls. And when AT&T moved aggressively into the internet and what's called internet transmission IP networks in the early 2000s, they chose to make these 8 buildings their sort of super nodes in their network, the places where they basically shifted traffic from local internet traffic to long distance traffic, just as they did on the phone networks. And so they serve this role as basically routing traffic around the country and making the network safer and more reliable. And so they also have this function of security and network management, which very easily plugs into government surveillance, because you're able to look at the traffic passing through these 8 points and basically touch all of the network from there.
So in a way, just to explain, because some of this can sound a little technologically abstract, these buildings congregate internet traffic in a convenient way to tap into, right? We're not talking about just this massive, if internet traffic didn't get collected into these hubs, it would just be a big massive peer-to-peer communication around the country, far too complicated to try to gather up. But because the AT&T buildings route information through these hubs, it provides very convenient points for the NSA to then tap into it. And what your article pointed out was that AT&T isn't just essentially turning over its customers' data, it's turning over the data of its partner corporations like Sprint and other companies, right?
Yes, so we also had a sort of didactic role in this story, because we basically had to explain how the internet works. Mm. The internet is a network of networks. That's why it's called an internet. And so AT&T has its own network, and then other networks have their own. They often have, you know, centers in the same cities, but not always. And so when you send an email, for example, to me, I can look at the header of that email and see which locations that email, an email is often split up into a small number of packets. If you're sending a large email, it will be broken up into more, but those travel through the network typically of your provider until the last point it can get to. But then sometimes it can't get to the point it needs to get to, and it has to go over another network. And the way that this is all handled and brokered is called peering. And so we found out that this program basically gives access for the NSA to all the other networks that send their traffic through what's called peering or transit through AT&T's network. And so it's not just about AT&T's customer, it's actually more the rest of the world that needs to send stuff to the US and vice versa. And it travels through these 8 locations and then goes into other networks.
So do the partners of AT&T, and some of them are even international partners, like a German telecom company, Indian telecom company, are they aware of what AT&T is doing with their customers' data?
We reached out to them and asked them, and I think only one gave us sort of meaningful feedback, and others said basically we don't comment on matters of national security. And you have to remember that these companies, in order to operate in the US, are subjected to US law, and this is fully legal surveillance, but in a way that I think most people are not aware of, in the sense that the NSA can freely listen to traffic that traverses U.S. territory as long as both parts of the conversation are outside the U.S. or one part of the conversation, which is the target, is outside the U.S. And then they can, incidentally, as they call it, collect the other party's conversation too.
The data that's actually being mm-hmm. turned over, I understand, includes emails, online chats, data from internet browsing sessions, phone calls, basically any kind of digital communication?
Well, it's everything that goes over what's called IP network, so internet protocol. And today that is basically everything.
Yeah.
Even a cell phone call, as long as you are not calling a person next to you. And I think even that cell phone call will at some point be broken up into IP packets. So it's I think, you know, maybe between 95 and 99% of all communications today that pass over some form of internet infrastructure.
As opposed to simply traveling up to the cell tower and the satellite and then bouncing back to the person you're trying to call, which was the sort of old-fashioned way of cell phone communications, which seems like a strange way to put it, given how recently cell phones have become in use. But of course, the internet is now the primary means by which we communicate and even transmit phone calls. So what do we know about how the data is shared with the NSA? So these 8 buildings create these hubs in these 8 US cities. Then how does the NSA access the information?
Right. So what our reporting shows is that there aren't necessarily NSA, employees or machines or rows of computers that belong to the state in these buildings. We think that AT&T basically receives lists of targets, what's called selectors, so that can be emails or phone numbers or even just specific, terms they are looking for, and then they filter the traffic going through these routing complexes or these eight internet hubs, and they send back a smaller, it would be but way too expensive, as one of the companies we reached out to very generously explained to us, it would be too expensive to copy everything, and the NSA wouldn't be allowed to do that either, but they do a lot of filtering, and then they get bulk data that is targeted. The problem is that that bulk data still isn't always, they're not supposed to spy on Americans. But we also included documents in this release that show that they were told that what they were doing was, hovering up too much data, and they basically were given a choice to stop doing it or come up with another method. They then came up with another method that then again later showed that they were still hovering up a lot of Americans' data that they weren't supposed to be intercepting.
Are they also doing this to non-Americans' data?
Oh yes, this is a program that primarily targets people outside the US. So people send stuff across the internet. I come from Germany. I'm Danish, but I've lived in Germany before coming here. And so if I send an email from Denmark to Germany, you would expect, because we still think of communications like in the back in the phone days, that it would just travel from Denmark to Germany the quickest way. But because the internet is so US-centric, often your traffic actually will route across the Atlantic and back. Or if you're communicating from, let's say, Iran to Colombia, well, there's basically no way to avoid your traffic going through the US. And so they have this what they call home field advantage, which in this program really helps them get the whole world's traffic through these eight locations.
So essentially, is AT&T required by the NSA to do this? It's a private corporation. It doesn't have to cooperate with the NSA, right? It's essentially choosing to do this. And as far as you know, is it getting paid to do this for the government, to provide this service to the government?
Our reporting did not provide any sort of clear evidence that either the one or the other was the case. Mm-hmm. What we know from previous reporting is that there are specific, basically secret arrangements put in place after 9/11 that more or less forced the telecoms to collaborate and cooperate and do this. But the degree to which they've done it seems to be quite different. And some of them have fought it way more than it appears that AT&T have done. But we didn't have a chance to look at documents for this reporting that told us more about that part of it.
These eight buildings, you have images of them in the Intercept article you published, their addresses are published, you describe them. Are local authorities aware of what these eight buildings are doing? As far as you know, do local authorities have any jurisdiction over the services, this bizarre private-public partnership between a federal government agency and this private corporation?
Again, that's actually a question that's hard to answer. I think so. In one case, when I was photographing the building in Washington, D.C., local police showed up, Capitol Police, which coincidentally are in the building across, and told me that they knew that the building was considered critical infrastructure. But I think they were also just alarmed by my presence. It's very close to the Capitol, and I climbed up on these railroad tracks to get a better vantage point. And so I don't actually know how much local authorities know. What I do know is that a couple of times when I've been photographing these private locations, I have had different degrees of interest from law enforcement. I even had the FBI show up at my house at one point. But that was actually just routine because they had been asked by AT&T to find out what this person was doing. And I do think that that makes sense because there is a small number of locations in this country where a lot of our traffic passes through. Apart from these buildings, there are also subsea cables. And there's a relatively small number of those. And if someone were to, try and blow them up, then it would be a problem for all of us. And so we also had some considerations about revealing the locations of these buildings because, you know, they are critical infrastructure. But we found that the public interest argument is strong because these are, you know, first of all, AT&T is by no means the only internet network in the country. And secondly, they are hardened buildings that were built in many of them the sort of atomic era. And so it's not easy to just walk up to them and damage them. And thirdly, it is in the public interest that this is going on and that there have been irregularities and surveillance going on at these buildings that was seen by legal authorities as unconstitutional.
It's interesting for AT&T to be playing this role, as I mentioned, not just its own customers, but the data of its partner corporations like Sprint and several other corporations, including international corporations. This special relationship that it enjoys with the United States government, it also seems to be a conflict of interest at a time when it is trying to expand, right? This is a corporation that's engaged in the middle of a massive merger. What are the sorts of, what do you hope that your article will prompt? We have had legislative fights over NSA spying, and AT&T and the NSA seem to be coming up right up to the edge of what's legally allowable right now. Are you hopeful that there can be some sort of political action, either locally or federally, on what AT&T is doing?
Well, I think my primary role as a reporter is to inform the public about what's going on, and then it's up to them to make decisions, and the same goes for legislators and other sorts of political bodies. And I'm just happy to provide the information, and then people can do with it what they want.
Are all 8 buildings identical in the role that they play, or are some playing a slightly different role than others?
Well, I think during our reporting, we found that because, you know, the internet constantly changes, these buildings have been there for a long time, and it's very hard to just move them because the cables are there and they've been there for, you know, decades. And so definitely some of them seem to have a more important position. For example, the New York building, we know from some people we spoke to that it was seen in the 70s, for example, as the most important communications hub in the country. Similarly, the Los Angeles building seems to be very key for communications with Asia and such. But on a sort of network topography, to use a fancy word, level, they all serve the same role, yes.
Well, theintercept.com, I'm assuming, is the best place to find that article, right? And it's quite lengthy.
Mm-hmm.
We'll post a link directly to it from our website as well. Hendrik, I want to thank
that
you so much
great.
For joining us today. Good luck.
You are most welcome. Thank you so much.
Hendrik Moltke is an investigative journalist and a documentary filmmaker, and we've been discussing an article he co-wrote with Ryan Gallagher in The Intercept called The Wiretap Rooms: The NSA's Hidden Spy Hubs in 8 U.S. Cities. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter and also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.